Hello, this is Brad Crandall. In this special Monitor half hour, Cap on Campus. Al Cap, creator of Lil Abner and a Monitor regular, our expert on nothing with opinions on everything. 2 weeks ago, Monitor presented a special Saturday evening half hour during which Al Cap was heard addressing the student body on the campus of the University of Alabama. Well, once again, Al Cap is on campus. This half hour, you'll hear excerpts of his remarks during a recent visit to Fresno State College in California, one of the many stops on his continuing collegiate lecture tour. At Fresno, the creator of Lil Abner was glowingly introduced by Mayor Hyde of Fresno. Mr. Cap's opening remarks ranged all the way from William Saroyan to free love.
Fresno before, I made a speech at Fresno State a year or so ago. It wasn't so much a speech, it was an audition. They said if I made good there, I could speak to you. But I've known Fresno, and I've loved Fresno for a long, long time by way of the stories of William Saroyan. I understand, he isn't read here much now. I understand you prefer the works of Jacqueline Suzanne. But any of you young people here who are interested in minority groups and ghettos and demonstrations, you ought to read your local boy, because Saroyan's attitude toward minority groups was different from, say, H. Rapp Brown's. Saroyan didn't object to living with other Armenians. He preferred to. Now, Saroyan didn't consider the neighborhood where Armenians lived a ghetto. He considered it the best place in town. Saroyan, as an Armenian, a member of a tiny and unaccepted and rather different-looking minority group, didn't demonstrate his superiority by looting and arson and rape. He demonstrated his superiority by a riot of writing superior to anything of its kind done in this country before. And Saroyan's fellow Armenians all over America demonstrated. They demonstrated their superiority by being more imaginative businessmen, better artists, better professional men. That was the Fresno kind of demonstration as opposed to the Watts type. And that is the sort of demonstrating, Saroyan sort, the sort that found its voice here in Fresno. The demonstration of one's ability to build, not to burn, that's the kind of demonstration that made this country great. Mr. Cap, who do you think will disappear first from public life, Dr. Spock or Eartha Kitt? Somehow, I see them doing it together. Now, they make a lovely couple vanish. Here, this is from a student. What do you think of free love? Well, the price is right. Do you feel that American women have forgotten to be feminine? I don't know, with the birth rate, what it is, they must have remembered something. Now, there's a question here saying, have you read our hippie newspaper, The Organ? Do you think it's typical of Fresno college students? I've read The Organ. If The Organ is typical of Fresno college students, then Polly Adler is typical of mothers. And Mandy Rice Davies is typical of English girlhood. Now, I noticed across the front cover of The Organ is a motto. Our rights and our privileges, and that newspaper means it. Our rights and our liberties, that's what it says. Now, take a look at the last issues and see what liberties the editors, the student editors of the Oregon, what liberties they take. On page 11 of the Oregon, you'll find an American woman, a wife and a mother, called a buzzard in print, simply because she happens to be a member of a despised minority group. She's the president's wife. Now, in a day when educated Americans are making every effort to erase racism, the advanced and anti-racist newspaper, this organ of the new left, this organ of the intellectual student, says this. This is a quote from it. When white folks smell blood, they'll go to any lengths to make certain they'll taste it and drink their fill, the pigs. Now, racism is racism. Hate is hate, whatever race the hate is directed against, white or black. No college should permit students to distribute a filthy thing like that on their campus. That isn't censorship, because that same college would not permit students to call a Negro leader's wife a buzzard. Or that college would never permit a newspaper to denounce Negroes as bloodthirsty pigs. No college should permit such equally racist bigotry, even if it's directed against the white race. And I suggest that the students who publish the Oregon transfer to the University of South Africa or Rhodesia's night school of race relations, where their hatred and their bigotry will be admired instead of detested, as I'm sure it is in Fresno today.
You're listening to excerpts of a recent campus appearance by Al Capp at Fresno State College in California. We'll take a break right here for a minute and then continue as Mr. Capp answers some provocative, interesting, humorous questions with equally provocative, interesting, humorous answers. So stay on the Monitor Beacon. You're back with Monitor at 17 minutes after the hour for more of Capp on Campus. Having just heard Al Capp's prepared, more formal remarks to the students at Fresno State College in California during his recent visit there, let's now monitor the question and answer period. Mr. Capp, no slouch at thinking on his feet, offers some fast and funny answers to student questions which included such unrelated subjects as Vietnam, Little Orphan Annie, and four-letter words.
And now for just a while, let's open the meeting up to questions from the floor. There are monitors scattered around. There are microphones. Just stand up, approach the microphones, and let's talk. Who has a question? Just raise your hand. Come over to the microphone, and I'll give you an evasive answer. Yes.
Would a different administration handle Vietnam differently?
Would a different administration handle Vietnam differently? Let me put it this way. In the midst of an appendectomy, would switching surgeons mean that the operation would be performed differently? Certainly, and it's a very smart thing to do. Next question.
What is the difference between colleges here and the students as compared to other countries?
Colleges here and colleges in other countries. Well, the kids at colleges are in other countries are a bunch of apathetic know-nothings. They're perfectly willing to let the president of the college and the professors run it while they learn something. Now, the stupid kids. Yes.
Mr. Capp, you've spoken at many other schools and institutions. What is the difference between a school such as ours and an Ivy League college?
What is the difference between this college and an Ivy League college. Well, now, about $1,000 in my fee. I'll tell you, I charge Ivy League colleges $1,000 more for combat pay. Students at colleges like yours are so badly educated that when you dissent with a speaker, you simply stand up and dissent. You don't use the new Ivy League method of beating the speaker up. That's why I charge them more. It's Medicare doesn't handle everything. Yes, another question. Yes.
Are you for or against the student campaign to make four-letter words accepted in schools? And I have another question.
I for or against the student campaign to make what accepted?
Four-letter words accepted
in schools. Four-letter words accepted in school. Yes, now that it's illegal to use a three-letter word in school, such as God, certainly we should fight to have four-letter words used. Kids?
Mr. Kapp, do you think our professors should be able to censor our readings?
Professors censor your readings? Certainly not. Who do they think they are? Why, they have delusions of power. They think that you go to college to listen to them. Let them learn the facts of life from you, children. Gosh, I hate to think there are professors here who are trying to talk to these kids. They haven't talked much, judging from the questions so far. Go ahead. Next one.
Mr. Kapp, I have a quote here from L. Mendel Rivers, who's the chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He says, "The cartoonists who disseminate unfair and untruthful information in cartoons are engaged in a conscious effort to give aid and comfort to the enemy." Would you care to comment on that?
He's entirely right, except that no cartoonist disseminates harmful or misleading information. It happens that we are all honest, straightforward, and truthful. And I wish I could say the same for Congress.
Mr. Kapp, earlier in the evening, you commented on Little Orphan Annie. Would you comment on the social and political philosophy of that comic strip?
The social and political philosophy of Little Orphan Annie is possibly the direct opposite of the social and political philosophy of Stokely Carmichael. Neither of them entertained me very much. Although you do notice a resemblance in their hairdos. I will not say an ungallant word about Orphan Annie. After all, she's 76 years old, that child.
Mr. Kapp, in the December 1966 issue of Playboy, you expressed the opinion that you have more respect and rather prefer the 18-year-old who is in the search for the dollar than the 18-year-old who's a humanitarian. You also expressed some ideas about the term humanitarian. Would you care to comment on that?
Yes. You show me an 18-year-old kid who hasn't been in the world long enough to prove he can do one thing for it, and who wants to change a world he's neither contributed to or knows anything about. You show me a humanitarian like that, and I'll show you a pest. You show me a kid, though, who is motivated by the noblest emotion that can grip a man, avarice. You show me a kid who is motivated by avarice, and I'll show you a kid who's going to do something useful for society because it's the only way he can get rich.
Go on.
What do you think of sensitivity training? This isn't being done at colleges.
Now, what is it called, sensitivity training?
It isn't being done at colleges yet. It's being done in students' home, and this involves students disrobing and discovering their sensitivity to each other by contact.
They call that sensitivity training now. Yes, well, I used to, the old word for it was orgy, of course. The mayor has just informed me that you have a city ordinance against it. What kind of... What do you do Saturday night? Heaven's sake. We'll have to revoke that ordinance, Your Honor. The Fresno will never be known as the Sodom and Gomorrah of the land of California. Yes.
There's been quite a controversy over the use of tactical nuclear weapons in Vietnam. Could you please define the term and give your feelings on it?
The controversy over the use of nuclear weapons in Vietnam made it imperative for the President of the United States to inform our enemies that we were not going to use nuclear force against them, and thus reduce this country to laughable impotence. Of course we won't use nuclear weapons, but why should we let them know it? Yes.
By the year 2000, it has been estimated that 300 million people will populate the United States. In view of the prospect of automation sweeping the country, how do you evaluate the Protestant ethic and leisure time?
When am I going to be 65? I want to get out of here before that mob takes over. I figure that by that time, we'll have found our way to reach the other planets where... there may be intelligent life. There's very little of it here. Yeah.
Mr. Cap, I'd like to know how you feel about the war in Vietnam.
How do I feel about the war in Vietnam? Lousy. How do you feel about it? Nobody feels anything about the war in Vietnam, certainly, except that it is a horror. Just as nobody has any feeling about an accident on the road, except that it is a horror. But we don't stop and argue about who caused the accident. We pull those living and who dear to us out of the accident, and we stop their wounds. That's what we do. And months later, we can find out who caused the accident. While Americans are dying in Vietnam, my policy is to shoot back, no matter how much that offends Dr. Spock.
You've just heard excerpts from Al Capp's comments addressed to the student body of Fresno State College in California. His visit there recently was part of his nationwide collegiate lecture tour.
You're pounding down the highway at the legal limit. At first it's fun. Then it's routine. Finally, it's monotonous. And that's when the driving drowsies strike. Don't take extra chances. Pull over and fight back with No-Doze. No-Doze has the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription, and it's not habit-forming. No-Doze. No car should be without it.
Reuben Mitchell's orchestra with a little something from Fiddler on the Roof called Matchmaker. Speaking of matchmaking, here's a perfect match. Monitor and Our Voice in northeastern Pennsylvania, station WSCR in Scranton. Serving more people, more ways, more often. Station break time all down the line, and then Monitor returns. Brad Crandall here.
This is the NBC Radio Network.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York. Jill St. John, Tony Franciosa. Fame is the name of the game. Watch it on the Sunday Film Festival tonight at 11:30.
That's on WNBC TV tonight at 11:30, in color on Channel 4, New York. The correct time now is 8:30 p.m. We'll have some Monitor music in just a moment, but if you're matrimonial-minded and you don't mind traveling a few miles to find a wife, you should consider Greece. Why? Well, the Greek government has announced that every working woman who marries after April 1st will get a $1,000 dowry. Other fringe benefits encouraging marriage in Greece are as follows. Vacations for working men and women, free babysitters, and free tickets to museums and theaters. I don't say anything about a free weekend for two on the Acropolis, but who knows? For Monitor Music, as promised, Mr. Sinatra to sing Poor Butterfly.
Smiles through her tears. I'm sure he'll come.
Monitor 68, available at all four compass points, covering the current, the topical, the interesting, and informative. I'm Brad Crandall. A bit later this half hour, Sport of Speed with Chrissy Konomacki reporting all of today's action in auto racing. And before that, a question. Why are some Broadway musicals, well, why do they become classics while others fade quickly? 3 minutes away, Broadway conductor Lehman Engel with the definitive answer.
As long as you go by the rules, love is a groovy game. It wasn't invented by fools, love is a groovy game. La 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 la, it's a groovy game. Lover's rule number one, lower the lights for the fun. Lover's rule number two, limit the players to do. La 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 la, it's a groovy game. Everyone can win, won't that be fun? If you lose your heart, I'll give you mine. Love is a groovy game. Come and play with me. Lover's rule number three, play it as cool as can be. Lover's rule number four, don't be too eager for more.
The Arbors on Monitor. The big-time Broadway musical is a unique art form. Envied, admired, even imitated the world over, its elusive, just-right quality has never quite been duplicated outside of the United States. But why are some musicals long-lasting, always popular, constantly being revived, while others fade after their first flush of popularity? A new book by longtime Broadway composer and conductor Lehman Engel examines the reasons with entertaining authority. Mr. Engel describes the necessary ingredients for a classic musical as he visits with Monitor reporter Betty Grobley in Washington.
In this book that you've done, you talk about some of the lasting qualities of the best musicals. What are these lasting qualities?
Well, Betty, I think that first we have to start with the workableness of the characters with whom all audiences at all times can identify. Next to that, but next to it, is the musical score, the music and the lyrics. when all of that in our recent past has been integrated properly with the dancing, with the dialogue, with everything, then we have shows that do not go out of style. Now, for example, it's very sad to realize that the Gershwins wrote a marvelous musical called Of Thee I Sing, which was the first musical to win a Pulitzer Prize. And it's deader than a doornail today. Not the score, not the songs, but the book doesn't work. It's too in. It concerns that specific period, the situations at that time, the jokes of that time, everything that was just chained to that period. And so today, that show does not work, and it will never work again. On the other hand, in our great period of musical theater...
What was that?
Well, starting about 1940 up through the early 50s.
It is the golden era.
The golden era, I would certainly call it, Betty. But during that time, we produced shows, and that's a long time ago. Pal Joy, 1940, that is 27 years ago, 28 years ago, almost. And we had the golden period of operetta as far back as 1924 to 26, when we had Desert Song and Rosemarie and Student Prince, which are eternal favorites with the American public around the country. The songs are sung all the time, re-recorded all of the time. They've all been made into movies. These things will go on indefinitely. And in the end, the best shows have an afterlife, and in the end, they earn more money than these that are playing to capacity houses for 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Well, how do you then account for the enormous success, the seeming success of MAME and Funny Girl and Hello Dolly and Sweet Charity?
It's complicated. I'm really not sure why, but for one thing, these are shows that are entertainment as opposed to something that has any innards. For another thing, and I don't discount this at all, the price of tickets is so high, because the cost of everything is so high, that you will find most of the audience is made up of middle-aged and elderly people. All of these shows...
Who can afford the tickets.
Can afford the tickets, exactly. And these shows are about, largely about middle-aged and elderly people, starring middle-aged people, particularly women. In fact, the male parts in all these shows scarcely exist at all. Only a single female part.
Well, now what about Fiddler? Fiddler on the Roof?
Oh, but Fiddler, I think, is a great, great, great show, and it's got all the qualities that all the best shows of our past.
You think this will last?
I think it will last forever and forever. But you see, it's universal. In Japan, people weep, I'm told, just as much as they do in New York. In Amsterdam, I saw it, and the Dutch people, who are largely or essentially almost all Protestants, were weeping about it too. In London, people are tremendously affected by it. And I think this is because this is a universal show, and therefore it will go forever.
And My Fair Lady, what category would that
I'd
be
say
in? That's also an eternal
thing.
One.
It's based on characters we were reared knowing about. It's Cinderella.
Lehman Engel, Brooks Atkinson, also says this in the preface to your book. He said, if a show is to succeed, the audience must believe in the theme. Would you concur with this?
I think believe is perhaps a limited word. I think perhaps he means more involved with it.
Why do you object to Man of La Mancha?
Well, I was not, for one, involved in it at all. I wasn't taken in by it. I thought it was a platitudinous, empty thing. And most people, not everybody, but most people are taken in by it, and they feel it's very inspiring. Not for me.
You can read more in his book, The American Musical Theater, by my guest, Lehman Engel, who Brooks Atkinson says knows more about the American musical theater than anyone else. This is Betty Grobley for Monitor.
For more wonderful music, the best and newest in the popular sound, and several minutes from now, Sport of Speed, the latest news from the thrilling world of auto racing. you just stay put on the Monitor Beacon. Once again, you're with Monitor. The time is 12 minutes before the hour. The singer is Sonny James.
Close the door, light the light. We're staying home tonight. Far away from the bustle and the bright city lights. Let them all fade away. Just leave us alone and we'll live in a world of our own. Oh, my love, I cry for you so much. Lonely nights without sleeping, how I long for your touch. Now your lips can't erase the heartache I've known.
Monitor Sport of Speed, featuring Chris Economaki with news, views, and results from the world of auto racing, one of America's most popular spectator sports. Here's Chris.
For the second year running, the opening race of the season at the Asheville-Weaverville Speedway in North Carolina has fallen victim to snowstorms and cold weather. Today's Fireball 300 for NASCAR Grand National Stock Cars had to be postponed. A new date for the 150-mile race in the high-banked half-mile track will now have to come from NASCAR headquarters in Daytona Beach, Florida. Those of us that are movie fans as well as auto racing buffs will be pleased to know that a big budget auto racing spectacular is to be filmed in the United States this summer. Tentatively entitled Winning, the Universal Studios flick will star big box office draw Paul Newman and will touch on Indianapolis type, late model stock, and sports racing cars, with some of the filming to be done at the Colorful Road Course in Lime Rock, Connecticut. James Goldstone will direct the widescreen epic, with much of the shooting to take place at the Indianapolis Speedway. When the baby grands of NASCAR's new Grand Touring Circuit roll out on the one-mile oval at the North Carolina Motor Speedway in Rockingham next Saturday for the Sand Hill 250, there'll be an eye-stopping sight. A woman driver, Jackie Smith of England, hopes to be in the field. Not since the early days of NASCAR racing in the immediate post-war era, when Louise Smith, Ruby Flock, and Sarah Christian were active in the stocks, has a lady fair taken on the men at their own game. But even without Jackie, the 250-mile event for Mustangs, Cougars, Barracudas, Darts, Camaros, and the like should be quite interesting. But with a woman driver on a high-speed super speedway, wow. In Longford, Tasmania, on the other side of the world, where the Tasman Series ends tomorrow, Jim Clark of Scotland has set the fastest time in practice for the event, turning a 2-minute, 12-8/10-second lap on the 4.5-mile circuit in his Lotus Ford. With 9 points to the winner, the Tasman Cup will now go either to Clark, who has 42 points, or to Ferrari driver Chris Amon of New Zealand, who is second with 36 points. Out of the running for the Cup, but assured of third place, is Piers Courage of Great Britain with 25 points. Graham Hill of England and Frank Gardner of Australia are next in line. In El Cajon, California today, Bill Vukovich got a lesson in rough riding, Chicago style, in the 50-lap USAC midget race at the Cajon Speedway. Vukovich, who took the lead on the third lap and was cruising along in first place until the 30th lap, when along came Henry Pins, a graduate of the Tough United Auto Racing Association Circuit of Chicago, who had started last in his Lineafi. Pins caught Vukovich and for three laps tried unsuccessfully to get by, then rammed Vukovich from behind, spinning him out of the race. Pins went on to win, followed by his Lineafi teammate, Mike McGreevy, Bert Folland, Dickie Deese, and Gary Bettenhausen. This is Chris Economaki for Monitor Sport.
Thanks, Chris. Sport of Speed with Chris Economaki, one of America's foremost authorities on auto racing, is heard every Saturday and Sunday nationwide on Monitor. Be sure to hear our other auto racing feature, World of Wheels, twice each weekend.
Are you going to Scarborough Fair? Parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme. Remember me to one who lives there. She once was a true love of mine.
Simon and Garfunkel on Monitor.
Has this ever happened to you? You're driving along, and then the monotony of driving gets you down. You're droopy. You've got the driving drowsiness, and that could be dangerous. Well, fight back. Pull over and take No-Doze. It's got the strongest stimulant you can buy without a prescription, and it's not habit-forming. No-Doze. No car should be without it.
This happened in Denver this week. A stranger stopped Frank Nunez on the street and asked for a cigarette. Nunez said he didn't smoke. So the stranger hit him in the face several times, then kicked him, then ran. Maybe they should print another warning on cigarette packs reading, "Not smoking cigarettes may be injurious to your health." called Orchestra 70, and the song is titled Tomorrow Morning. Let tomorrow take care of itself. What about today, now, this very hour? Nationally and worldwide, NBC Monitor News on the Hour covers that subject completely and expertly. Next. Stay tuned. This is Brad Crandall.
So we must take a station break. Don't turn your set off. Don't you make a mistake. Don't leave us behind. There's still lots more time. Good morning, sir.
Hi, this is Long John Neville, inviting you to be with me from start to finish on WNBC. That's right, WNBC's day begins with my 5 to 6 a.m. telephone show, Straight Line, and concludes with my early hour show at the 4 to 5 a.m. finish line. In between, there's the Long John Neville show from midnight to 4, and the earlier early hour from 8 to 9 p.m. So join me, Long John Neville, day and night on WNBC.
Monitor New York, your weekend sound on WNBC New York.